Chapter 14. The problem which was already being mooted by such scientific men as Ramsey, Rutherford, and Soddy, in the very beginning of the 20th century, the problem of inducing radioactivity in the heavier elements, and so tapping the internal energy of atoms, was solved by a wonderful combination of induction, intuition, and luck by Holston so soon as the year 1933. From the first detection of radioactivity to its first subjugation to human purpose measured little more than a quarter of a century. For 20 years after that, indeed, minor difficulties prevented any striking practical application of his success, but the essential thing was done. This new boundary in the march of human progress was crossed in that year. He set up atomic disintegration in a minute particle of bismuth. It exploded with great violence into a heavy gas of extreme radioactivity, which disintegrated in its turn in the course of 7 days, and it was only after another year's work that he was able to show practically that the last result of this rapid release of energy was gold. But the thing was done at the cost of a blistered chest and an injured finger, and from the moment when the invisible speck of bismuth flashed into writhing and rending energy, Holston knew that he had opened a way for mankind, however narrow and dark it might still be, to worlds of limitless power. He recorded as much in the strange diary biography he left the world, a diary that was up to that particular moment a mass of speculations and calculations, and which suddenly became for a space an amazingly minute, an human record of sensations and emotions that all humanity might understand. He gives, in broken phrases and often single words, it is true, but nonetheless vividly for that, a record of the 24 hours following the demonstration of the correctness of his intricate tracery of computations and guesses. I thought I should not sleep, apostrophe he writes the words he omitted, are supplied in brackets on account of pain in the hand and chest and the wonder of what I had done. Slept like a child. Apostrophe, he felt strange and disconcerted the next morning. He had nothing to do. He was living alone in apartments in Bloomsbury, and he decided to go up to Hampstead Heath, which he had known when he was a little boy as a breezy playground. He went up by the underground tube that was then the recognized means of travel from one part of London to another, and walked up Heath Street from the tube station to the open heath. He found it a gully of planks and scaffoldings between the hoardings of house wreckers. The spirit of the times had seized upon that narrow, steep, and winding thoroughfare, and was in the act of making it commodious and interesting, according to the remarkable ideals of Neo-Georgian aestheticism. Such is the illogical quality of humanity that Holston, fresh from work, that was like a petard under the seat of current civilization, saw these changes with regret. He had come up Heath Street perhaps 1,000 times, had known the windows of all the little shops, spent hours in the vanished cinematograph theater, and marveled at the high-flung early Georgian houses upon the westward bank of that old gully of a thoroughfare. He felt strange with all these familiar things gone. He escaped at last with a feeling of relief from this choked alley of trenches and holes and cranes, and emerged upon the old familiar scene about the white stone pond. That, at least, was very much as it used to be. There were still the fine old red brick houses to left and right of him. The reservoir had been improved by a portico of marble, the white fronted inn with the clustering flowers above its portico still stood out at the angle of the ways, and the blue view to Harrow Hill and Harrow Spire, a view of hills and trees, and shining waters and wind-driven cloud shadows, was like the opening of a great window to the ascending Londoner. All that was very reassuring. There was the same strolling crowd, the same perpetual miracle of motors dodging through it harmlessly, escaping headlong into the country from the sabbatical stuffiness behind and below them. There was a band still, a women's suffrage meeting, for the suffrage women had won their way back to the tolerance, a trifle derisive, of the populace again, socialist orators, politicians, a band, and the same wild uproar of dogs, frantic with the gladness of their one blessed weekly release from the backyard and the chain. And away along the road to the Spaniards, strolled a vast multitude, saying, as ever, that the view of London was exceptionally clear that day. Young Holston's face was white. He walked with that uneasy affectation of ease that marks an overstrained nervous system and an under-exercised body. He hesitated at the white stone pond, whether to go to the left of it or the right, and again at the fork of the roads. He kept shifting his stick in his hand, and every now and then he would get in the way of people on the footpath, or be jostled by them, because of the uncertainty of his movements. He felt, he confesses, inadequate to ordinary existence. He seemed to himself to be something inhuman and mischievous. All the people about him looked fairly prosperous, fairly happy, fairly well adapted to the lives they had to lead, a week of work, and a Sunday of best clothes, and mild promenading, and he had launched something that would disorganize the entire fabric that held their contentments and ambitions and satisfactions together. Felt like an imbecile who has presented a box full of loaded revolvers to a creche, he notes. He met a man named Lawson, an old school fellow, of whom history now knows, only that he was red-faced, and had a terrier. He and Holston walked together, and Holston was sufficiently pale and jumpy for Lawson to tell him he overworked and needed a holiday. They sat down at a little table outside the county council house of Golders Hill Park, and sent one of the waiters to the Bull and Bush for a couple of bottles of beer, no doubt at Lawson's suggestion. The beer warmed Holston's rather dehumanized system. He began to tell Lawson as clearly as he could to what his great discovery amounted. Lawson feigned attention. But indeed he had neither the knowledge nor the imagination to understand. In the end, before many years are out, this must eventually change war, transit, lighting, building, and every sort of manufacture, even agriculture, every material human concern, then Holston stopped short. Lawson had leapt to his feet. Damn that dog! Cried Lawson. Look at it now. Hi. Here. Phew. Come here, Bobs. Come here. The young scientific man, with his bandaged hand, sat at the green table, too tired to convey the wonder of the thing he had sought so long. His friend whistled and bawled for his dog, and the Sunday people drifted about them through the spring sunshine. For a moment or so Holston stared at Lawson in astonishment, for he had been too intent upon what he had been saying to realize how little Lawson had attended. Then he remarked, well, and smiled faintly, and finished the tankard of beer before him. Lawson sat down again. One must look after one's dog, he said, with a note of apology. What was it you were telling me? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.